set up on a small table in the corner. Britt the Elder sat at that keyboard in her office chair, staring into the monitor, motionless, her right hand resting on the mouse.
"Hello! There you are," Philip said.
Britt the Elder didn't move. Now that he was in the room with the source of the high-pitched whine, Philip could tell that it was coming from the general area of the computer. Philip took a step closer.
Hello?
Britt the Elder said nothing and remained perfectly still. Half of Philip wanted to grab Britt the Elder by the shoulders and force her to acknowledge him. The other half wanted to teleport out of there, move to some island in the Caribbean, change his name, and never find out if what he suspected was true. He took another step. In the back of his head, he pictured a beach, a grass shack that didn't conform to standard building codes, and a closet full of Hawaiian shirts with laundry tags that read John Smith. He said,
"Britt!"
His increasingly panicky-sounding inner voice said,
"Maybe she's onto something and doesn't want to break her concentration to talk."
In his mind's eye, he saw the ignorant and happy Mr. Smith, hard at work at his new job teaching tourists how to operate snorkels. He was standing waist-deep in the cool blue ocean saying,
"That's it, folks. The secret is to breathe only when the end of the tube is sticking up in the air."
Philip reached out and gently grasped Britt the Elder's shoulder. She remained perfectly still. He saw that while it appeared that her right hand was hovering a fraction of an inch above the mouse, the only part of her hand making contact was the tip of her index finger on the mouse's right button. Philip exerted the slightest bit of force into Britt the Elder's shoulder. Her body was rigid, as if carved from stone. On the screen, he noticed that next to the text window in which the file was displayed, there was a smaller window labeled Untitled Notepad. One of the three-number sequences Jimmy had spoken at length about earlier was copied into the notepad window. Britt's left hand hung in space above the keyboard, her pinky and index finger resting on the control key and the letter V. Britt the Elder had wanted to copy a section of Britt the Younger's memories over her own. Philip thought they had talked her into taking a day to think it over. Clearly, they'd just given her time to do it anyway, without any interference. As he watched, the computer flickered, its entire flat-screen monitor briefly turning into a smooth black rectangle with a blurry, large-print approximation of the display plastered onto its front, like a sticker. As the computer shifted back and forth between its normal and low-res states a few more times, Philip noticed that the keyboard, mouse, desk beneath it, wall behind it, and Britt's entire body were flickering as well. Philip pulled on Britt's shoulder. As her entire body tilted back, her hands and feet all lifted without even the slightest muscle moving, Philip spun the chair. Britt the Elder's left eye was three-quarters open. Her right eye was three-quarters shut. Her mouth hung open, her lips curled into an odd shape. She looked like she'd been frozen mid-word, making a face no human being would ever make deliberately for more than a fraction of a second. The computer and wall behind her shifted states again, and Britt did as well, briefly taking on the appearance of a character from a late 90s video game. As she regained her normal appearance for just a moment, quick enough that Philip wasn't sure he'd seen it, her facial expression changed, her features twisting into a picture of pure agony, then blinked back to look as it had before. Philip leaned in and turned his head away so that his ear was closer to Britt the Elder's mouth. The noise he'd been hearing was coming from her. Philip cringed and recoiled in horror, flexing his right hand as if he'd caught a fast-moving baseball without a glove. Britt the Elder sat motionless, randomly leaping between looking frozen, poorly rendered, and racked with anguish and pain, all the while emitting a sound that could be a small fraction of a word or the beginning of a shriek of agony. Philip rubbed his hands together and bit his lower lip. He didn't know what to do.
"I have to do something," he thought. "I can't just stand here rubbing my hands together."
He looked down at his hands. His left felt normal, but the right felt odd. The palm was slightly numb, but also slightly itchy. At first, both hands looked fine, but then, at the exact moment that the wall, the computer, and Britt the Elder all flickered, the palm of his right hand, where he'd grasped Britt the Elder's shoulder, also transformed, losing all texture and variation in its coloring, before immediately changing back. 23. 15 minutes later, Brit the Elder's main room was full of concerned wizards and a constant high-pitched tone coming from Brit the Elder in the next room. Brit the Younger muttered, "How could she be so dumb?" Philip said,
"It's not just her. We were both dumb."
Brit the Younger said, "Oh, I know. Believe me, I understand that. All I'm saying is that it's surprising for her to do something this stupid."
Philip said, "I deserve that."
Brit the Younger said, "Again, I know." They all lapsed back into silence, allowing the constant drone from Brit the Elder to reassert itself. Brit the Younger said, "We could stuff a towel in her mouth."
"Brit!"
Philip scolded. "Oh, shut up. It's not like she's breathing." Louisa and Gwen emerged from the office. Louisa had been a doctor before she found the file and became a sorceress, so she acted as the de facto primary care physician of the entire magical community. Martin asked, "How is she?" Louisa shrugged.
"What do you expect me to say? She's frozen. Stuck. I don't know what else to tell you. What's wrong with her isn't medical. No pulse, no circulation, no brain activity, and no respiration. I should declare deceased, except that I know what dead looks like, and that isn't it."
"Why not?"
Gary asked.
"Well, she's making noise, for one thing. Also, when a person dies, their tissues start deteriorating immediately. She's not. Her body's in perfect order, aside from the fact that it keeps phasing in and out and doesn't seem to be functioning at all."
Brit the Younger turned to Philip. "Let me make sure I've got this straight. She had a memory that didn't match what really happened, and her feet started looking weird?" Philip held up his right hand, palm forward. All of the wrinkles, folds, and creases on the front of his palm and fingers briefly disappeared, replaced by smooth planes and sharp folds.
"They did this. Her feet were doing this, just like the rest of her and her desk is doing in there."
"And the wall,"
Louisa said.
"Yes,"
Philip agreed.
"And a small part of the wall."
"No, not a small part," Louisa said. "Most of the wall behind the computer is jumping in and out like she is."
"I must not have seen how far it went. I was a bit distracted."
Philip turned his hand to look at his palm, made a fist, and lowered his hand to where he wouldn't have to look at it. Brit the Younger said, "Whatever. So Brit the Elder has this terrible problem, and she tells you about it? But you choose not to inform me, even though you knew it would affect me in the future." Philip said,
"Well, now, I
do not," Brit interrupted. "Tell me about free will. You know that I believe she's me in the future, so you know that whatever happens to her, I believe will happen to me."
"I wanted to tell you. I was desperate to tell you, but they told me it wasn't safe,"
Brit the Younger shouted.
"They? You didn't tell me, but you did tell someone else?"
"No, Brit the Elder did before she told me, and it doesn't really count because..." "Oh, no. I'm so sorry. I need to check on someone. I'll be right back. Transporto alla officejo."
Philip disappeared. Brit the Younger let out a long, frustrated grunt. Philip reappeared with someone else in tow.
"Everyone, this is Brit, the Much Elder."
Brit the Much Elder nodded. "Good to see you all again. I don't like being called Much Elder, though. Please, just call me Brit." Brit the Younger said, "No. Why haven't I met you before?" "We have. I mean, I've met you. You'll meet me again, someday, and that'll be the first time we meet. For me. I try to stay out of your life. You've got enough on your plate with Brit the Elder, who I hear has done something stupid. I'd like to see her." Philip started to get up.
"She's in her office. I'll show you the..."
Brit the Much Elder put up a hand to stop Philip. "You stay there. I remember where the office is. I used to live here." Brit the Much Elder excused herself and disappeared down the hall. Gary said,
"Another Brit? Jeez, how many of you are there?"
Brit the Younger said, "I don't know. I've never met this one before." "How did you meet her, Philip?"
"Brit the Elder introduced me, I swear."
"You say that like you think it'll make this better somehow."
"Brit, I wanted to tell you what was going on, but I had two people, who you believe are you, telling me that the two of you being in the same room might lead to a crash that would destroy the world."
"And the fact that there were two of them in the same room didn't do anything to disprove that idea for you?"
"No! I mean, yes, at first. But then they said that made telling you more dangerous, because then there'd be three of you. Look, it made sense when they explained it."
"I doubt that." The constant high-pitched whine from the other room stopped abruptly. All conversation ended as every head turned to look at the office door. Brit the Much Elder came out.
"Did you fix her?"
Philip asked. Brit the Much Elder said, "I stuffed a towel in her mouth. It's not like she's breathing." Britt the Younger allowed herself to smile for half a second before she went back to glowering at Philip.
So all this time, you've been sneaking off to hang around with two other Brits and work on this problem?
Not just us.
Who else are we missing? Britt the Elder still?
No, not another Brit.
Who then?
Britt the Much Elder said, You should tell them, Philip. In fact, I'll go get him. He's more likely to know what to do than either of us. Britt the Much Elder disappeared. Philip bit his lower lip.
Okay. I want everyone to be ready for a shock. Please know, I didn't want to involve him to begin with.
Britt the Much Elder reappeared with Jimmy, who was wearing his old green and gold wizard robes. Philip put up his hands in a futile effort to quiet the howls of shock and protest he anticipated. The effort was futile because the howls didn't come. Philip asked,
Why aren't you shocked? I don't think you understand. We didn't go back before Jimmy died to get him. This isn't Jimmy from the past. This is Jimmy after the whole slog with Todd. He faked his own death.
Tyler said,
We know, Philip. You're the one who told all of us that you didn't believe he was dead.
Well, here's proof!
Philip motioned toward Jimmy.
Right here!
Gwen said, We didn't need proof. We were sure.
No, you all thought he was dead.
Jeff said, At first, but then Roy and I tracked him down. I check in on him every now and then, just make sure he isn't causing any trouble. Gary said, Me too. Martin pointed to himself and Gwen.
We went together. Kind of made a long weekend of it. Reno can be a lot of fun, if you have the power to warp the laws of probability.
Tyler said,
And I haven't been checking up on him per se. I've just gone to visit a few times.
Jimmy said, And you're always welcome, Tyler.
Philip didn't understand.
What?
Tyler shrugged.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I went, it was to make it clear to him that he hadn't fooled me. But then we got to talking, and it turns out we share a lot of interests.
Like what?
Fantasy literature, for one thing.
Well, yes,
Philip said.
I suppose that checks out, since he killed everybody in a small town trying to turn them into hobbits, and made you disappear when you found him out.
Yes, but he took his punishment, which lasted decades from his point of view. When he came back, he proved that he changed his ways and put up with us still treating him like a monster. Then he saved my life. Yours too, Philip. Heck, he saved most of our lives. That doesn't erase anything he did, but, you know, you gotta let go of your anger eventually.
Philip said,
So you've all known that he's alive, and none of you told me or Britt?
Britt the Younger said, I suggest you think very carefully before you act mad at them for keeping something a secret from you, Philip. Philip thought very carefully, then nodded.
Point taken.
Britt the Younger said, Okay. So Philip's been keeping his activities with the two elder Brits secret from me. We've all been keeping Jimmy secret from Philip. Jimmy tried and failed to keep himself secret from all of us. Is there anything else anybody'd like to get off their chests? Several heads turned to look at Martin, who shrugged.
Yeah, okay. I'll be right back.
He disappeared, then rematerialized. Future Philip appeared beside him, slouching and scowling. His face turned beet red, his oily hair whipped around, and spittle flew from his mouth as he unleashed a prolonged series of insults, obscenities, and threats, none of which could be heard since he was still trapped in Martin's mind box. Philip pointed at Future Philip, but looked at Martin.
What is this?
It's you,
Martin said, avoiding eye contact. Philip stepped closer, studying Future Philip, who was now silently shouting directly back in his face.
Yes, I figured that part out. Why is he here, and why can't I hear him?
He's the Jawa. I said someone was messing with you. I was right,
Martin pointed at Future Philip.
He was messing with you. So I captured him.
Future Philip ran out of breath and finally stopped his silent shouting. He put a hand out and leaned against the invisible wall of his prison, panting. Martin smiled and touched the end of his staff to the force field.
Now that he's calmed down a bit, I'll let him talk. Unmute!
Future Philip's loud panting became audible. He glared at Martin and in a hoarse growl said,
You idiot! This is exactly what I was trying to prevent!
What is?
Martin asked.
This! this problem, this meeting. Britt the Elder being stuck mid-word in there. You all trying to figure out what to do about it.
He pointed at Jimmy.
Him being here. Martin, if you had just stayed out of my way, I would have gotten in my own way, and we might have prevented all of this.
Well, how was I to know?
I told you! Repeatedly!
You said you were trying to prevent a tragedy. You didn't say it was this.
This isn't it. Not all of it. Just the beginning.
Philip asked, okay, what else happens?
You'll find out,
future Philip said.
It can't be prevented now, so we'll all just watch it together. And when it's done, we can all thank Martin.
Martin said, that's not fair.
None of this is fair, Martin. And by the way, I knew about your stupid mime box. I've known about it ever since you told me about it. Just now, all the way back when I was him.
He pointed at Philip.
Then how'd I trap you in it?
You caught me by surprise. I didn't think you'd stoop so low as to trap me when...
Martin blurted, mute! Future Philip's voice went silent, despite his mouth's continued motion. Martin grinned at Philip.
I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Philip asked his future self,
can you please show me your right hand?
Future Philip held up his right hand. Philip asked,
the front of the hand and all of the fingers, please. Not just the middle one.
The older Philip obliged, showing a perfectly normal hand with no sign of a glitch. Britt the younger said,
well, this is all a fine mess.
Tyler said,
or maybe it isn't. Maybe everything is fine. I think we're all looking at this the wrong way. I mean, Dirty Philip says that there's gonna be a tragedy, but later Britt says otherwise, just by being here.
Philip asked,
how so?
Britt the much elder said, what Tyler's thinking is that since I'm a later version of Britt the elder and I seem to be okay, then everything must turn out fine. She has to either come out of it on her own, or one of us figures out how to fix her.
Exactly,
Tyler said. And he's wrong, Britt the Much Elder continued. Britt the Elder was suffering a glitch. We can't know just how much of the timeline was affected. We can't assume that, because I'm here, everything's fine.
And Grungy Phillips' hand is okay.
That doesn't mean there isn't a problem.
No, but it's a good indication that everything works out.
Look, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do anything. I think we have to do something. I'm just saying that whatever we do, it seems like it'll work.
Jeff said, this whole thing started because Britt the Elder had a problem with her memory, right? And now she's messed with her memory? She might have caused her own problem retroactively. We could find the part of her code that applies to the memory that was out of sync. I'm betting it's the one she deleted anyway. Then we compare the code in her memory file to the code in both of you Brits' files and make it match. In theory, that should restore her memories and fix the damage she did. Roy stroked his chin.
It's certainly a simple solution.
Jeff said, thanks.
And a damn sloppy one. Just rushing in and making changes is how she ended up the way she is. When you blunder your way into a problem, the solution's almost never to blunder your way back out of it.
Jimmy said, I agree. We have to do something, but we have to be smart about it. We need to set up a simulator, or if we can't figure that out, test ideas out on rats or something. I wouldn't feel good about it, but it's Britt the Elder's life we're talking about.
Louisa said,
there are well laid out protocols for testing things on animals. I think in this case it could be done humanely. We'd be teaching them mazes and changing their code, not any painful medical procedures.
How long would that take? Britt the younger asked. Louisa and Jimmy looked at each other and shrugged. Jimmy said,
weeks? If we're very lucky, probably months, maybe even years. There's no way to know. But we're time travelers. We can take as long as we need.
Britt the younger shook her head.
You all keep saying we when you talk about someone doing all of this work, but let's be honest, we're talking about me. I'm the one who's going to have to do it.
We'll all help you, Gwen said.
Yes, you'll help me while I do it. It's not going to be as urgent to all of you as it is to me, because I'm the one it's going to happen to.
She pointed at Britt the much elder.
It's not as important to her, because it already happened to her, and she's come out unscathed. We're talking about my problem.
Britt the much elder said,
you're right.
She's right.
It's her future we're talking about.
She should decide what we do.
So, what'll it be?
Before Britt the younger answered, Philip put a hand on her shoulder and said,
there are only two options. Sure, one will take a tremendous amount of time, effort, and discipline, but it's the safest, wisest choice. The faster option Jeff suggested is just too risky, despite being far, far easier. Really, Britt, you have no choice.
Philip smiled at Britt the Younger, who scrunched up her face in irritation without looking at him. He cast his eyes over the rest of the group, none of whom looked impressed. The only one making eye contact was future Philip, who stood in his invisible prison with a look of contempt and disgust. Britt the Younger sat up straight.
Sorry. One second, I have a call. It's Nick, I should take it.
Roy said,
I didn't hear anything.
It's set to vibrate.
Martin asked,
Nick can make calls?
Britt the Younger glared at Philip.
He might need me to pick up something for dinner. He knows he can count on me for that kind of thing.
She swiped her finger through several menu items only she could see and jabbed at the item she wanted.
Hello?
Nick's voice, clearly under great stress, said,
Britt! Thank God! Britt the Elder isn't answering!
Yeah, she's indisposed. What's up?
What do you mean, what's up? You don't know?
No, what's going on?
Get somewhere that you can see Britt the Elder's house! Half of it's acting weird. It's... I don't know how to describe it. All the edges are going all weird, and they're changing back and forth. Just go look, you'll see.
Britt the Younger said,
I'm in Britt the Elder's house.
She and all of the others turned to look down the hallway toward Britt the Elder's office. Martin, predictably, had risen to his feet and started toward the office, but stopped short when the entire hallway flickered into low-quality polygons and back. Philip said,
It's spreading.
Britt the Younger said,
We noticed.
The hall flickered again. This time part of the living room wall and floor flickered with it. Philip said,
And it's getting faster!
He looked at his hand and saw that the air had taken over the backs of all of his fingers. Again, Britt the Younger said,
We noticed.
I just wanted to make sure we're all up to speed!
Britt said, We are. You aren't. Philip turned to look at her and saw that everyone was headed for the exit but him and the future version of him who was standing in his invisible prison, still looking at Philip, shaking his head. 24. Britt the Younger stood by Britt the Elder's entrance door, ushering everybody else out. At the back of the pack, Britt the Much Elder exited, levitating the frozen and error-riddled Britt the Elder out of the house she herself had damaged. The only ones left in the house were Britt the Younger, Martin, and future Philip.
Come on!
Martin shouted.
We've got to get out of here!
Future Philip knocked on the invisible wall of his cell. Martin said,
I'll make it move with you! Come on!
Future Philip mimed a man walking with his fingers, then used the other hand to lift the little imaginary man he'd made and carry it.
I'm not going
to
carry you,
Martin said. Future Philip shrugged, crossed his arms, and held his ground.
Fine!
Martin poked at his smartphone screen, pointed his staff at Future Philip's transparent prison, and swept the staff's head toward the door. As his cell moved, it shoved Philip along, forcing him to stumble his way out of the house. It was easy to see how the citizens of Atlantis had noticed the problem. Three-quarters of the house was glitching out, the frequency and duration of the low-res periods both increasing, and with every transition, more of the house was affected. In the time it took the wizards to clear out of the house and hustle across the patio to the park beyond, the house was almost totally involved, as was a perfect circle of ground radiating from the rear of the house and growing with every second. The air started working its way across the stone patio. The two guards posted there did not move a muscle until Britt the Younger told them, You're dismissed, at which point they took off running at top speed. Martin pried his attention away from the spectacle of Britt the Elder's house and looked up at the rest of Atlantis. Britt the Elder's home was located at the very bottom of the bowl. All of the terraces, all the way to the very rim, had unobstructed views of the house, and Martin could see that every one of them was lined with people looking down at the problem, watching to see what the wizards and sorceresses were going to do about it. Martin turned to the others.
What are we going to do about this?
Nobody spoke up. After a few seconds of furtive glances and noncommittal mumbling, all of their eyes converged on the two functioning Brits, Britt the Younger and Britt the Much Elder. One of them had built Atlantis long, long ago, and the other would build it herself someday, so they naturally had some jurisdiction over how to handle the problem that threatened the city. Britt the Much Elder looked around, thought for a moment, then looked at Britt the Younger and said,
I got nothing.
You? Britt the Younger shouted,
What? No, I don't know what to do. It's not like I've ever dealt with this before. I mean, I have something I've been working on, but I don't think it's quite ready for this big a problem.
Gwen said, What is it? I say we give it a try.
Britt the Younger said,
Another me comes back from the future and handles the problem while I take notes on what she does so I can come back and do it later.
Gary asked,
"Would that work?"
Another copy of Brit the Younger appeared.
"Yes, it will.
I'm from an hour from now. It's all handled. Now, here's what we did. What you're going to do. Brit the Younger, you follow me and take careful notes of everything I do. Here's a pen and paper." The new Brit held out a plain composition book and a cheap disposable pen. Brit the Younger took them, opened the notebook, and started writing. The Brit from 1 hour into the future opened another composition book, identical to the other, except that it looked well used. The pages filled, the cover bent and creased, and several of the pages dog-eared. She opened the notebook and scanned the pages as she spoke. "Brit the Much Elder, you take Brit the Elder and Hobo Philip to Gary's. She'll be isolated out in the woods there, and we can all meet after all of this and figure out our next move. As a bonus, the sight of her glitching out and Philip's unwashed beard and hair might scare off some of Gary's unwanted apprentices. Is that all right with you, Gary?"
Gary said, "Yeah, sounds good. If you want any food or anything, Hubert will take care of you."
Brit, the 1 hour elder, said, "He'll offer, and you don't want anything. Now for the rest of us. First, I suggest we all levitate. The glitch is moving fast, and it's almost on us. We don't know what'll happen if we're standing on the ground when it starts going wiggy, and I don't want to find out." All of the wizards lifted off of the ground, except Gary, who stayed on the ground, smiling smugly.
"Wait a second. If you don't know what happens if the air reaches us, that must mean that it won't get to any of us."
The new Brit said, "That's right, Gary. Which also means that you must lift off before it gets to you, which it will in less than 5 seconds." Gary looked down, saw that the air was only a few feet away and moving fast, and leapt into the air with an undignified yelp. Brit, the 1 hour elder, said, "We need to evacuate the city. Martin, Philip, you go up to the rim and commandeer as many boats as you can." Tyler raised his hand. The new Brit pointed at him, but instead of asking what his question was, she glanced at her notebook. "Yes, Tyler, we could just use our powers to fly everybody out of here. But a major part of running a successful evacuation is keeping people calm. Boats calm people down. Flying through the sky completely under someone else's control does not." Tyler lowered his hand.
"Makes sense."
"Good. While Martin and Philip get the transportation ready, the rest of us are going to start directing people up to the rim. We do everything we can to help them get up there, but we don't carry them. Understood? They need to get out under their own power. It'll seem less urgent that way, and keep them from panicking. Everybody got it? Good. Let's go." Brit the Much Elder disappeared, taking the stricken Brit the Elder and the disheveled future Philip with her. The other wizards took off in every conceivable direction, leaving Brit the Younger scribbling furiously, Brit the 1 hour elder watching the wizards with deep satisfaction, and Gwen looking at the two of them skeptically.
"So this is a system you've been working on?"
Gwen asked. Brit the 1 hour elder said,
"Yes."
Gwen turned to Brit the Younger.
"And you're taking notes of everything she does?"
Brit the 1 hour elder said, "You keep writing, I'll answer. Yes, she is."
"And you know what to do because you read her notes?"
"That's right."
"So if the notes come from watching what you do, and what you do comes from reading the notes, who came up with the actual plan in the first place?"
"Both of us. Neither of us.
In general, the system's meant for emergencies, so it's sort of a given that we have more important things to worry about than who gets the credit. That said, I'm having to work harder than I should since the notes are kinda sketchy."
Brit the Younger looked up from her notepad.
"Well, what do you want? I'm under a lot of stress here."
Brit the 1 hour elder said, "That's a really good note. Please write that down."
Brit the Younger went back to writing, but said, "When we tried this out on Philip, we used the video camera. That was to watch how the experiment went. But I think it'd be good for just documenting the action."
"Yeah.
And maybe instead of asking you to take notes while you're in the emergency, we should bring in another Brit to document everything after the fact." Brit the Younger shook her head.
"Another Brit? That's your answer for everything."
Martin and Philip slowed to a hover as they rose just above sea level. Looking at the city from this angle always made Martin uncomfortable. When he saw Atlantis from a distance, all he could see was the wall-like rim and some building tops poking up above the surface of the ocean. It looked like an unusually well-built-up island. When he was down in the bowl, all he could see was the city around him and the sky above. Only when he hovered just above the rim, as he was doing now, could he sense the millions of tons of seawater pressing in, and the enormous hollow, a perfect hemispherical hole in the surface of the ocean in which the city sat. The distance to the bottom of the city gave him vertigo, the motion of the waves made him queasy, and the precariousness of the entire arrangement made him nervous. Looking down around the city's marina, he saw ships moored to docks that sprouted from the rim like a bird's plumage. Sailors and traders milled around, going about their business, unaware of the events at the bottom of the bowl. Martin said,
"Citil iras al decunu,"
triggering a macro that amplified his voice to a volume that would make the sound technician for a monster truck rally suggest that he tone it down. He cleared his throat, frightening away every bird in the ship's riggings and drawing the attention of every living thing within the sound of his voice.
"Hello! Look! Every person in Atlantis is in great danger! We're evacuating! It's imperative that everybody gets as far from the city as they can, as quickly as possible!"
One of the sailors shouted,
"Thanks for telling us!"
He was barely audible over the sudden cacophony of all the ship's captains issuing orders to cast off immediately. Philip said,
"Maybe you should have asked for their help, then warned them about the danger."
Martin shouted,
"Wait, don't cast off yet! We need your help! Come on! Stick around long enough for us to load some people onto your boats!"
Someone shouted,
"No thanks!"
Ropes thudded on decks and oars splashed as every vessel started pulling away.
"Hold on, guys!" Martin shouted. "You're not in any danger! There's no need to rush off like this!"
"Good!"
a sailor shouted.
"Then the people still in the city don't need to leave!"
"Shut up!"
Martin pointed at a particular sailor, the captain of a big flat barge, meant for hauling supplies back and forth from the mainland.
"Hey, you, hold up a second!"
The captain and one of his three deckhands used long poles to shove off from the dock, then ran forward to unfurl the barge's square-rigged sail. As the captain fumbled with the ropes, he glanced up at Martin and said,
"Sorry, can't. I have a strict policy of obeying any order to evacuate."
Martin flew out to follow the barge.
"Hey, you! How many people can this boat carry?"
4. Me and my crew. The rest of the space is set aside for paid cargo."
"Well, how about you come back and let us load it up with people?"
"What does that kind of thing pay?"
"Couldn't you just do it for the joy of helping someone else?"
"Couldn't you just pay me for the same reason?"
For a moment, Martin seemed on the verge of losing his temper, but he stopped himself and hung in the air, not moving. Philip flew up and watched his friend for a moment before quietly asking,
"What are you doing, Martin?"
"I'm thinking. Before I do something rash, I'm taking a second to think about what the smart thing to do would be."
"And what have you come up with?"
"This."
Martin flew forward, pulling the silver box that held his smartphone out of an interior pocket. He hovered above the barge, swiping through menus on his phone, then pointed his staff at the vessel, bathing it in an eerie green glow.
"Hey!"
the captain shouted.
"What are you doing to my ship?"
The glow subsided and Martin closed the box.
"Nothing now. I'm done."
Martin turned to Philip. "I'll be back in a second." Martin disappeared. Philip shrugged at the captain. Martin reappeared, nodded at Philip, then turned to face Atlantis and raised his staff in the air. The captain, standing at the stern of his ship as it pulled away, shouted,
"What are you gonna do?"
Martin looked back over his shoulder.
"Oh, are you still here? Don't worry about it. You can go."
"Maybe I don't wanna."
"Oh, you wanna? It's about to get real crowded."
Martin quickly pulled his smartphone out of his pocket and flipped open the silver box he used as a case. He pressed his thumb to the screen, turned his attention back to the city, and swept his staff through the air. The sea between Martin and the rim of Atlantis filled with exact copies of the barge, filling all empty space, packed so close together that one could walk from the edge of the city to the far end of the flotilla without getting their feet wet. That was fortunate, since the instant they appeared, people started streaming over the rim, down the docks, and onto the ships. The captain of the barge, his voice distant and faint, shouted,
"Those are copies of my ship! They're rightfully mine!"
Philip pointed his staff and created a force field that pushed the barge away at an unnaturally high speed. When the captain was no longer audible, just an angry fist-shaking speck in the distance, Philip said,
"Well done, Martin!"
"Thanks."
"Who's going to man them?"
"They're self-driving. As each one fills up, they'll automatically break free from the pack and head for the mainland."
"Thinking before you act suits you, Martin."
"Yeah. The problem is, I usually don't think to do it."
Britt the Younger, Britt the One-Hour Elder, and Gwen floated up through the center of the city, monitoring the progress of the air, which had engulfed Britt the Elder's house, the park that surrounded it, and the governmental buildings all clustered at the very bottom of the bowl. The glitch was still expanding, engulfing a roughly circular footprint that constantly expanded and accelerated at a steady rate. Well above the expanding air, the crowd of people fleeing from the glitch progressed at an even faster rate. The citizens of Atlantis made their way to the rim of the city, clogging the walkways and staircases, packed so tightly that one could crowd surf on them if that person was under the mistaken impression that it was 1994. Louisa, Tyler, Jeff, Roy, Gary, and all of the sorceresses of Atlantis flew around the interior of the bowl, shouting instructions and encouragement to the people, urging them to remain calm but to leave as quickly as possible as they could. Britt the Younger looked up from her notebook.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a stampede or a riot or something. Nobody's panicking.
Gwen said, they're leaving because we're telling them to, but we've coddled these people so much they think nothing really bad can happen to them as long as we're all here to save them.
Britt, the one-hour elder, said, it's kind of the opposite of the problem we had in Lead Church, with the dragons. There they thought they'd all be killed by our mistakes. Here, they think our mistakes can't hurt them.
I can't help noticing that the common denominator is us making mistakes.
On that note, Britt, the one-hour elder, held up a finger to pause the conversation, snapped her copy of the notebook shut, and projected a glowing blue force field that shot toward a small boy who'd slipped off of a walkway and was now falling to the next path, four stories below. The force field rocketed forward and intersected with the boy's trajectory right after he had passed. Tyler streaked into view and caught the boy by the arm. As he flew the child back to his grateful parents, Tyler took a second to glance at Britt, the one-hour elder, his expression clearly asking, "What's your problem?" Britt, the one-hour elder, said, "That's exactly how it went down before. It just underscores the need for a way to time our response to events down to the split second if this system's going to work."
Gwen asked, "How are you going to do that?"
Britt, the younger, still writing notes at a furious pace, said, "We have an idea. It'd probably work, but it's kind of, I don't know, dorky?"
"Yeah," Britt, the one-hour elder, said. "But I haven't come up with a better idea in the last hour."
The three of them gained altitude, rising above the rim of the city and drifting out over the marina. Gwen pointed into the distance.
"What's the story there?"
Martin and Philip hovered motionless above the waves, arguing with a man standing on a barge that was identical to all of the others, except that it only had a few people on it and it was anchored in place. Britt, the one-hour elder, smiled and placed a call to Philip, who answered instantly.
"Yes, Britt! I'm so glad you called."
Britt, the one-hour elder, said, "Be quiet a second. We want to hear what's going on over there." In the background, Gwen and the two Brits heard Martin say,
"I made them. I own them. I can do what I want with them."
The man on the barge said,
"But you made them by copying my ship. They're copies of my property, therefore they are my property."
"Are you arguing that I copied your ownership when I copied the ships?"
"Yes."
Britt, the one-hour elder, ended the call without saying a word to Philip. Gwen and Britt, the one-hour elder, busied themselves assisting the other wizards and sorceresses, directing people onto the barges, breaking up fights, and assuring people that they didn't need to struggle to keep their families on the same barge as all of them were going to the same beach on the mainland. 20 minutes after beginning the evacuation, the wizards watched as the last of the civilians stepped down from the dock onto one of Martin's automated barges. Most of the wizards followed the flotilla, flying a few yards above the ocean. Even Gwen moved on, putting distance between herself and the magic-made city that now seemingly had been destroyed in a magic-made disaster. Only the two present Brits, Britt the Younger and Britt the One-Hour Elder, remained behind, looking down into the bowl. They watched the entire city, the city they had imagined and would one day build, randomly flicker between looking perfectly normal and resembling a poorly rendered mock-up of itself. Britt the Younger said,
"At least the water seems to slow it down."
As the glitch spread down the docks to the very farthest points from Britt the Elder's home at the city's rim, the water lapping at the affected surfaces did change, flickering in unison with the rest of the city, but the spread of the air slowed to a crawl once it hit the water.
"Maybe it's because the water's in motion,"
Britt the Younger said,
"or because the molecules aren't bonded to one another." "Doesn't matter," Britt the one-hour elder said. "I'm not cheered up by the idea that the inevitable destruction of all things has been slowed down. If we don't think of a way to fix this, it'll spread to all of the world's water and all of the land that touches it like some kind of digital ice nine. In a way, I think Vonnegut would be pleased. We have to think of a way to fix this."
"Maybe we do," Britt the Younger said.
Or maybe any second now, another me will turn up and fix everything. They floated there in silence for a moment. Then Britt the Younger started to write something in her notebook. "You don't have to make a note of the fact that nobody showed up," Britt, the one-hour elder, said. "I'll remember. Look, my job's done here. I'll be on my way. I'd say that I'll see you later, but you'll be me an hour from now." With that, Britt, the one-hour elder, disappeared. Britt the Younger placed an invisible spherical force field around the entire city, more to keep people from wandering into the area than to prevent it from spreading. After that, she flew out toward the flotilla, past Martin, Philip, and the captain of the original barge. Philip said,
"The barges aren't going to be of any use to you. We're just going to make them disappear when the people have unloaded."
The captain shouted, "Are you threatening to destroy my property?" 25. 3 hours later, most of the wizards sat around in Gary's newly remodeled home in medieval England. Shortly after they all reconvened, Louisa and Jimmy left to go put their heads together on a solution to the glitch without distractions. Britt the Younger excused herself to go be Britt the One-Hour Elder and guide the evacuation of Atlantis. She returned in a matter of seconds, and the two functioning Brits got to work. Britt the Younger and Britt the Much Elder had made it clear that the only way the others could really assist them would be to stop trying. Since then, the others had merely sat on the two built-in sofas that lined the sides of Gary's brand-new conversation pit, feeling utterly superfluous, yet too emotionally invested in the proceedings to leave. Besides, the Brits could declare that they were ready to try their fix at any moment, and they all wanted to be there, either to watch it happen or to try to stop them. They wouldn't be sure which until the time came. They sat as far from the Brits as they could, lest the grim silence grow too distracting for them. The Brits worked on two identical, high-powered computers set up on the dining table with two monitors each. On each monitor, they had the same set of windows open in the same pattern. Martin found the whole scene weirdly fractal, but looked at the faces of his friends and chose not to mention it. Britt the Elder hung suspended in midair, frozen in the exact position she'd sat in back at her home. Her left arm was extended in front of her as if rested on her desk. Her right hand hovered in space, the index finger extending downward to press the button of a mouse that was nowhere to be found. A dry washcloth protruded from her mouth, deadening the constant squeal she produced. The washcloth had long since started glitching at random intervals, just like Britt the Elder herself. Clear down at the far end of the room, future Philip sat, leaning against the wall, sulking in his silent prison. He'd been told that he could go free if he'd just tell them how to fix the mess they were in, but he said nothing and stayed in his transparent box. Across from Martin were Tyler, Gary, and Roy, looking around in a bored, uncomfortable manner, each exuding that unique attitude that most men are capable of but only use in theaters and airplanes. That they don't want to seem uncomfortable sitting next to each other, but are still going to great pains to make sure that there is no physical contact whatsoever. Martin glanced at Gwen, who sat beside him on the couch, drumming her fingers. They were all in a terrible, stressful situation, but he and Gwen had made up, and Martin refused to feel guilty for being happy about it. Beyond her, Philip sat, ramrod straight, with his eyes closed in thought. All in all, wizards had little to do but stand by, look concerned, and examine Gary's redecorated home. The quality of the decor was all too predictable. Gary had created a stylish bachelor pad, as envisioned by a man with little or no style. Dim lights almost illuminated walnut paneling and an assortment of darkly colored furnishings, as if Gary had figured that if people couldn't really see his home, they would simply assume it was cool.
"Where are all of your apprentices?"
Jeff asked. Gary said, "Out in the clearing in front of the cave, doing some landscaping. I'm thinking of putting in a swimming pool. I disguise it to look like a pit full of blood or lava or something, but it'll be a normal pool full of water with a diving board and a spa."
"In ground or above ground?"
Tyler asked. Gary grimaced at him.
"In ground? Who's ever heard of an above ground pit of blood? That just looked cheap."
Martin said, "You should have had them make you a shoe rack. If you're going to make us take off our shoes before we come in, you should give us somewhere nice to put them, instead of just making us leave them in a heap outside the door."
I've got a brand new carpet to protect. And I like the shoe heap, Gary said. If any locals see it, they'll assume the shoes belong to my victims.
Martin ran his foot across the cream-colored shag, noting that his toes almost got lost in the strands.
It is quite a carpet. I didn't know they made them this thick.
I had to special order it. It's the deepest pile they can make.
Gwen said, "The pile is deep. I'll give you that." Roy examined the joinery of one of the dining chairs.
I'll admit, the workmanship's really good for a bunch of untrained medieval peasants.
Gary laughed.
No, this isn't the stuff they made. I went to the future, bought what I wanted, then had the guys try to make something similar. When they were pretty much done, I swapped what they made with the good stuff with a cloud of smoke and a light show and told them the tools I gave them were enchanted.
Why go to the trouble?
Tyler asked.
I want to build up their confidence, make them feel like they're capable of accomplishing things.
So you lied to them?
Yeah. I didn't know any other way to do it, in their case.
Martin looked at Philip. He had been through an awful lot, and Martin was concerned for his friend.
How's your hand?
Philip flexed the fingers of his right hand. He had put on a black glove and pulled his robe sleeve down to cover his wrist.
It feels okay. I think it's almost up to the elbow, but I kind of don't have the nerve to look. I saw Brit the Elder's problem spread to her shoes, but I just didn't think about it spreading to other people. What's done is done. I've got more important things to worry about. You know, I considered going with a sequined glove, a sort of a tribute to Michael Jackson.
Martin said, I'd suggest a metal gauntlet, like in the Army of Darkness. It's a bit less dated of a reference.
Gwen muttered, just a bit. Philip looked up toward Brit the Younger, pouring all of her concentration into the computer monitor. Martin saw a strange certainty in Philip's eyes, as if he had made some momentous decision and now intended to act on it. Martin said, no.
What?
Philip asked.
Don't do it.
Don't do what?
Whatever you're about to do.
You have no idea what I intend to do.
True, but I know it's something, and anything you could do other than sit there looking unhappy would be a mistake.
I'm just going to tell Brit.
Martin put up a hand. I'll stop you there. Making contact, any contact with Brit, any Brit, is a terrible move. One of them can't talk to anybody, and the other two don't want to talk to you.
Philip said,
I know, and that's why I need to talk to them.
Gwen shook her head. You see what women have to put up with? All of the male wizards who weren't Philip nodded. Roy said,
Phil, when your engine overheats, do you let it cool off or do you step on the gas? Give them time to cool down. I need to make it clear that I'm sorry and that I want to help.
Tyler nodded.
Understandable. Thank you.
And you intend to do so by doing something you know they don't want.
I rescind my thank you.
You shouldn't, Gwen said. You should double down on it. The guys are giving you good relationship advice. I'm as surprised as anyone. If you're smart, you'll listen and do nothing until some Brit gives you a signal that they want to talk to you. Philip said,
You're probably right. I should wait for them to make a move.
Yes, you should.
Unless...
No, Gwen pointed at him. No, unless...
Unless by not talking to me, they're leaving me an opening. They could be waiting for me to make the first move. Why, if you look at it that way, I'd be a fool not to go talk to them.
Yes, Martin said. If you look at it that way being incorrectly.
Philip stood up, straightened out his robe, and asked Gwen,
How do I look?
Like a man about to make a terrible mistake. Philip ignored her and walked to the edge of the conversation pit, near the table where Brit the Younger and Brit the Much Elder were hard at work, conferring in hushed tones over some line of code or other. Philip smiled sheepishly, looked up as he was standing in a pit beneath the Brits, and cleared his throat. Brit the Younger said, No. Philip walked up the two steps out of the pit.
I just wanted to.
Brit the Much Elder looked at him, not entirely unsympathetically.
You heard her.
Philip didn't slow his pace as he hooked around in a tight U-turn, stepped back down into the pit, walked back to his seat, and sat down. As he settled into his seat, he noted the looks of sadness, mixed with amusement, on the faces of his friends. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw future Philip,
sitting disconsolate in his invisible prison, making an obscene gesture at him.
That went exactly as well as I expected, Gwen said.
A high-pitched warbling sound rang out. Gary held up his left hand, a flat image of Jimmy giving a thumbs up in front of the famous Reno, the biggest little city in the world arch, floated in the empty space above his upturned palm.
You gave him a custom ring image?
Philip grumbled. Gary answered the call.
What's up, Jimmy? Luis and I've been talking and we have a suggestion to make. Is everyone still at your place? Yeah. Mind if we come over? Sure, see you soon.
Gary hung up. Philip asked,
Are you really comfortable having Jimmy in your home?
Gary said,
He called before he came over. That's more than any of you does anymore.
Jimmy and Luis appeared.
Jimmy said, Hey, everyone. Luis and I've been looking at things.
Gary said,
Shoes. What? My carpet. It's brand new. Please take off your shoes.
Jimmy and Louisa both hastily slipped off their shoes. Louisa bent at the knees, scooping her shoes up off of the ground in a single fluid movement. She looked around for a moment, then asked,
Where should we put them?
Gary said,
There's a big pile of them just outside the door.
Clearly, you think how we treat your carpet is more important than how we treat our shoes.
Gary shrugged.
To me, yes. It's my carpet and they aren't my shoes.
Once they deposited their shoes on the top of the pile of footwear just outside the door, Jimmy said,
So, as I was saying, Louise and I have been looking at things. Combining what she knows about medical research and what I know about altering people's file entries, we've worked out a schedule for how to safely research Britt the Elder's problem, and in time, come up with the solution.
Everyone faced Jimmy and Louisa except Britt the Younger, who kept her eyes on her monitor. Britt the Much Elder said,
Hey, Britt, they say, I heard what they said. Well, don't you think you should listen to?
I am listening to them. I can listen and work at the same time. That's how I heard him in the first place.
Britt the Much Elder shrugged and turned her attention back to Jimmy and Louisa.
Louisa said, Everyone agrees that we need to figure out what's gone wrong with Britt the Elder, and by extension, Atlantis and Philip's hand. Jimmy and I have laid out some protocols for how to ethically experiment with the code in a way that will slowly build until eventually you'll be able to make certain specific changes to Britt the Elder's code with a reasonable certainty of safety.
Gwen asked,
Could you please define what you mean by a reasonable certainty of safety?
Don't bother, Britt the Younger said, still focusing on her monitor. Tell me about eventually. How long is that?
Louisa shook her head.
It's impossible to say for sure.
Take a guess.
You can't rush these things.
So how long will I be wishing I could rush it?
Jimmy bit his lip.
Phase one should take around, I'd say 6 months.
Britt the Younger took her eyes off of her monitor and spun her chair to the side so she faced Jimmy and Louisa.
It should take around 6 months? Should? About? There's a lot of wiggle room in those words. How long would it take, exactly?
Jimmy said, Probably somewhat longer.
Probably? Somewhat?
Louisa said,
We can't tell you exactly because we don't know, but we believe it would take at least 6 months.
For phase one?
Yes.
And how many phases are there?
Jimmy said,
Something like five.
Something like?
Depending on how successful it is. If any of the phases fail, we'll need to repeat it until it works.
Britt the Younger said,
No, thank you.
But then we can come back in time with the solution, and Britt the Elder, Atlantis, and Philip's hand would all be fixed immediately.
That's not the problem. Look, Britt the Much Elder and I have found a chunk of memory we think got corrupted. It'll take us maybe another 20 minutes to make sure we have all of it, then we can replace it with the uncorrupted section from our memory, and we should have this all handled within the hour. It's risky, maybe. There's a chance that something could go wrong, or that it won't work. The same thing's true of your plan. It's dangerous, too, and it has a 100% chance of taking years of work to execute. If my choices are fast and dangerous versus slow and dangerous, I'll take fast and dangerous every time.
Yes, but remember, we're time travelers. We wouldn't experience it in real time.
The rest of you wouldn't, but I would.
For all of you, a future version of me would pop up any second now, present the fix she worked on for years, and then you all say, problem solved, then, and get on with your lives. I'm the one who'll be stuck doing the years of work.
Philip said,
You wouldn't have to do it alone.
We'd all help.
But it's not all of your future, or all of your brains we're talking about. It's mine. Your hand and Atlantis would get fixed as a byproduct of dangerous experiments on my head. I would need to supervise everything, and in the end, I would end up doing most, if not all, of the real work myself. We're talking about me making the saving of Britt the Elder my life's work, while the rest of you help out on an occasional basis. I can see where this is an attractive plan for the rest of you, but I'm not buying it.
Okay, Gary said. You're against it. Does that mean it's off the table, really? Something this important, shouldn't we put it to a vote?
A vote? Britt the Younger asked. We are discussing my time and effort, put into performing a dangerous procedure that I've already said that I'm against, on me, and you think we should put it to a vote?
It just seems like the most democratic way,
Gary said, his voice growing quieter with each word.
It would be, but I don't remember ever making my personal life choices a democracy.
Roy said,
Look, you're right that this affects you more immediately than it does the rest of us, but we are all involved. If her glitch continues unchecked, it could crash the whole program, and then we're all done.
Britt the Younger said, All the more reason to get this fixed fast.
No,
Roy said,
All the more reason to get it fixed right.
Okay, Britt the Younger said. Think about this. The idea is that we, and by we I mean me, we spend however many years fixing this mess Britt the Elder made, then what, we, and again I mean me, come back and fix her here in our present, her future me's past? If that's what we end up doing, then where's the future whoever with the solution they spent years on? Where are they, hmm? I mean, if it were me, you'd think they'd turn up right now just to prove the point, wouldn't you? So let's wait a second and see if any more of me turn up.
They all stood in silence for a moment, more out of awkwardness than any real expectation that visitors from the future would materialize. Nobody appeared. Britt the Younger nodded.
Right. So I guess that settles.
She stopped abruptly as another iteration of Britt appeared, raised her hands in the air, and held that pose as a wave of energy emanated out from her, filling the room. When the light had dissipated, all eyes turned to Britt the Elder, who still floated, frozen and unresponsive, flickering at random intervals. Philip pulled the black glove off his hand. The entire front was still affected, with only a small patch on the back left unchanged. Britt the Much Elder said, It didn't work. I hope you didn't spend too much time on that. The Brit who had just appeared said, I didn't. I'm only from a couple of minutes in the future, and all I did was put everyone who isn't a Brit into one of Martin's mime boxes, so they can't keep us from handling this the way we want. She disappeared as suddenly as she'd appeared. The wizards all pressed their hands against the unseen barrier that held them in. They shouted magic spells meant to transport them out of their invisible prisons. When that failed, they shouted various things, first at the Brits, then at the mime box itself, before they settled into shouting at Martin. He tried to tell them that he couldn't hear them, but they couldn't hear him, and kept shouting.
26. Britt the Much Elder shut her eyes and pinched the bridge of her nose.
Why did you do that?
Britt the Younger smiled.
I didn't, but I'm going to. She sat down at one of the computers and started moving and clicking the mouse with great purpose.
Let's see. If the mime box is a macro, it should be available in the Lead Church shell program.
Britt the Much Elder looked at the other wizards, all of whom attempted fruitlessly to talk to her. She shrugged at them and turned back to Britt the Younger.
Why? Why are you doing this? Why are you trapping your friends? They're just trying to help you. How can you possibly ask me why I'm doing anything? You, of all people, know why I'm doing this, why I do everything. Because one of you future versions of me already did it. So now I have to. For once, one of you has done something I'm excited about, and I'm not letting you mess it up for me. Just hold on a second and think. No, thinking will just make me angrier. I've spent years stuck in Britt the Elder's freaky time wake. No matter what I do, it's what she decided I'd do years before. Then, finally, a situation comes along where we're in uncharted territory, and the very first thing she decides is that I can't know. So she tells my boyfriend and convinces him to keep it from me.
A future version of him remembers what a mistake that was, though he seems to have forgotten about bathing in the process, and instead of coming and telling me, he just starts messing with his former self. Martin sees that happening, and he tells literally everybody else but me. They discuss it several times, and the only thing they agree on is not letting me in on the secret. And now, when my future health and the next several years of my life are on the line, they all want to tell me what to do.
Brit the Much Elder said, I remember how much I resisted.